Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm absolutely delighted to have one of my goalkeeping inspirations in, a man that I've watched many, many times in his 700 appearances. Massive thank you, Dean Kiely, for coming in.
I played 759 games, kept 246 clean sheets, and yeah, I counted. I had three unbelievable years at Bury. Dan Turner just created an underdog, dirty, horrible squad of players, upsetting people, beating Arsenal at Highbury, Chelsea on Boxing Day, beating them 4-2. Talk about golden eras. You don't see me doing this, doing that, swimming for longevity, because when it finishes, it finishes.
Yeah,
you're done. January went to West Brom, and I was at West Brom for 8 years. With my Apple Watch, I made a dive, and my Apple Watch said to me, "It appears like you've had a fall." For example, like Joe Jordan, the coach there, when we're winning and on this great escape and this great run, and I'm flying around making saves, making a contribution. Oh, brilliant. Dino. The next season, David James comes in and I'm keeper.
What a save from Mark Howard.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Yours, Mine, Away podcast. I'm Mark Howard. What an episode I've got for you today. I'm absolutely delighted to have one of my goalkeeping inspirations in, a man that I've watched many, many times in his 700 appearances, especially at Charlton, being a local boy. Massive thank you, Dean Kiely, for coming in.
Pleasure, Mark. Yeah, good to be here.
Proper legend in the game. Probably don't like hearing that yourself, but to have amassed the amount of games you have and the longevity of your career, it was obviously inspiring to someone like myself as well.
Listen, for me, I played 759 games, kept 246 clean sheets, and yeah, I counted because they're mine. Some people don't. I did.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same with clean sheets.
I just wanted to be consistent, reliable, dependable.
Yeah.
And now I'm coaching to see what you have to do to get in someone's starting 11 in terms of all the conversations that go back and forth. Who we're playing in, we're doing this, we're doing that. For me now, when I look back to play that amount of games under so many managers and different clubs means, yeah, I'm pleased. You know, people say football's a game of opinions, but I don't go along with that. I'm happy with, you know, the way I set out and did it, and it's good. Yeah, it's worked out well.
Yeah, to amass that amount of games, obviously you've got to be professional and dedicated. You've got to have a little bit of luck and be lucky with injuries and stuff like that, but you've got to have that desire to love what you do. And like I said, you got to 40, 41 years old. You must love goalies.
Yeah, listen, all I wanted to do is put a bit of training kit on and Monday to Friday just throw myself around, impress the manager, show your peers and your teammates what you're about, get in the team. Once you get in the team, what do you want to do? You want to stay in there? I wasn't one for, you know, rotating, and probably number two goalies who were in behind me would be like, you know, I didn't get any cup games or this, that and the other, but I was like to the manager, I don't need resting, I just want to play. Yeah. Like, and if you're playing to a level and they keep picking you, you just want to keep doing it, don't you? You know, that was the way I looked at it, really.
Yeah, because it was only, I remember once in your career, I think it was at Portsmouth, that you found yourself out of the team and you was like, right, well, I'm going to go and get games somewhere else. And you had a mindset of like, I'm a goalie to play.
So one reflection, when I came out of the team at Charlton, had a sort of real bad finger injury. And then it just ended a little bit sour under like Alan Kirbishley, who was off and whatever. And I just went, well, my status is not going to change at this football club because of what I'd done over the previous 6 years. So I literally made a knee-jerk reaction. I went, I'm going.
Yeah.
And then Portsmouth, Jersey Dudek, no, don't want to go to Portsmouth. Mark Swartzen, no. And I was like, I will.
Yeah.
And I went, and they were in a right state as well, right down the bottom of the Premier League, trying to stay in. And I played 17 games for Portsmouth back end of that season. And then football's football. A lot of people tell you a lot of lies to your face.
Yeah.
And then something else. David James rocks up and again looked at it. I was like, not doing this.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
And it's nothing about being precious about being a number two or whatever. Not at all. It's like, I just want to play. Because when it's over, it's over. You can't restart. You know, I don't work in an office and go, oh, I'm going to work in an office again. I'm a footballer. Once you stop being a footballer, you're done.
Yeah.
So that time has just got to, I just wanted it to be as productive as possible and crack on and play the game. So, you know, the journey and the twists and the turns, when you look back at it, I'm like, I'm happy with my decisions. Although at the time I was thinking, oh, you know, what have I done here? I'm driving down to Portsmouth at 5:10 in the morning to miss the traffic and get out and train down on the south coast when before I had a lovely life in southeast London doing my thing for Charlton.
Yeah. Again, it just goes down to that desire and that want to play. Like, I think every goalkeeper's got it, and then through different stages of your career, things happen or you end up in different scenarios, and that's the hardest thing. And you must see it even more now as a goalie coach, trying to manage those situations as a coach, but also as a man and a friend to those people. That's the hardest bit, I would say.
Yeah, I think exactly right. The transition is difficult, because you don't know anything about football. You know everything about football, but what you do as a player, even in a team sport, you look after yourself. You get yourself in the right position, in the right place, mentally, physically, whatever, to play or to support or to whatever that role be, you do it. The coaching for me was, you look around, you go, right, I've got two in the under 18s. He's this, he's that. He's playing, he might need this. Then the 21s is that, oh, he needs to be up training with us. The three senior ones I've got, he's a bit fed up. He's flying, he's this, he's that. You go, and you're looking after everything. You're looking after everything and everyone. And it's daunting at first, but then you get the rhythm and off you go, you know.
Yeah, obviously you gain that trust with each other and you end up with building that relationship. That's the biggest
thing.
Listen,
don't get me wrong, it's not all flowery and lovely and this, that and the other. I'm sure over the years when people disappointed with decisions I've had to deliver or what a manager has or this, that and the other, but as long as people know it's for the right reasons, I'm pretty straightforward, I'm pretty clear, simple fella in terms of good, bad, indifferent, there it is. That's what it looks like. That's what it feels like. Crack on.
But again, someone that looked up to you as well, when you deliver a message like that or you tell them it's not personal, this is the reason, it's for the best of the team or this is the best for this is what the manager wants. Like, it's never a personal relationship between a goalie coach and his goalies.
Yeah.
Although that you're the best of friends and you work as hard as anyone together. But when you're telling people that, that's the hardest thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tough.
You are friends.
Because sometimes as well, they probably don't deserve,
yeah,
in some cases, they don't deserve what's come their way or what's landed in their lap. And it sounds cliche to say, hey, listen, keep your head down, keep working hard, you know, things change in situations, whatever. And they probably look back at you and think, yeah, all right, I heard it all before, this, that, and the other. But as long as they know it's coming from the best place in terms of me as a person, you know, not trying to blag or bluff anyone, just listen, this is what it is. I can't dress it up any other way. You're in, you're out, whatever it be. That's all you can do, I think.
Yeah, right. I'm going to crack on with a couple of quick fire questions to break us into this. Right, so it's catch or parry?
Catch, preferably.
Yeah.
But I did a load of parry.
Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Right. Play short, kick it long.
Kick it long with a half volley for me.
Yeah, you used to be a half volley. It's gone out of the game now. All of last week, right, this is weird because all of last week, Van der Sar used to be my idol, but he used to do that bounce and half volley.
Yeah.
And like all week, just for fun, I've just been like trying to recreate it. And obviously you are one of the old half volleyers.
So listen, at 53, now coaching, I not shout at the top of my voice, but sometimes the end of training was a little bit of a lull. I'll say to the younger players, I don't know if you had a television in the early noughties, But there was a lot of this going around, and then they just zing a half volley.
Oh, that's lovely.
Just like put that stinging sort of five iron half volley into areas. So I've still got it.
It's a skill. It's a proper skill. It must have been even harder on the pitches.
You can't do it on a wet pitch. You dribble and drive on a wet pitch, but when you can, there's no better feeling behind that. And then I speak to people, Charlton fans, this and they go, oh, I used to kick the ball out of play, this, that, and the other. And you take it. But you know what you're trying to do? You're trying to pick sevens and 11s out. You're trying to hit areas.
Yep.
And if you miss a seven or 11 by a foot, it goes out for a throw in and go, oh, you've got 70 yards to kick it on. I don't want to stand in the middle of my 18 yard and kick it into the centre circle for two big centre halves to head it back.
Yep.
The fact they don't know that is fine by me. Yep. I know I'm trying to do what the manager wants me to do. But yeah, stood behind a half volley, best feeling in the world.
It's beautiful to look at when you're behind a half volley. See, actually, like the fundamentals of a half volley is a hard technique. But again, when you go into coaching, I've heard so many good things about your service, and that obviously would come back to how good your technique would be with a ball.
Yeah. So I want to serve everything in training. I want to keep work through quads of keepers. I don't like sessions where the other two goalies are striking balls from 20 odd yards and really putting force through them. I want to do all that serving. And I can now, sat here now, I can still do it.
Yeah.
The minute I can't do it, I'll stop and I'll go and do something else, because I want to take part in the sessions that I'm delivering, really, and drive them. So, service is good at this moment.
Yeah.
The odd one, I am only human.
Yeah, of course.
The odd one goes astray.
Right, your favourite ever goalkeeper?
So Jimmy Rimmer used to play for Aston Villa when I was a kid. Tony Godden at West Brom. So I was a schoolboy at West Brom.
Yeah.
I'd go and watch him play. I used to go to Bodymore Heath in school holidays and just basically stand at the gate with others. They were collecting autographs. So I was just wanting to see see sessions and flying around. They say never meet your hero. I met him at Swansea when I was at York City, and he was so miserable, and he gave me literally 3 seconds of, oh, all right, mate. And I was like, oh, no.
Oh, no.
No. I don't think I dressed it up properly from my point of view. I was a little bit in awe, and he was a little bit like, oh, who's this geezer, I think. So that was a bit...
It's not like a goalie, that. Normally we're the biggest and the loudest.
Yeah,
and...
but do you remember the European Cup when he had a big pile of gloves
and
he come off injured, Nigel Spink went on and this, that and the other. They were, for me, their technical memories as a I don't know, what was I? 11, 12, whatever it be, watching stuff like that. So, yeah, that sort of era.
Right. Head tennis or two-touch?
Head tennis all day long. And
absolutely buzz off a game of head tennis.
Yeah,
you love spike ball. I'm going to get onto spike ball.
I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I'm going to get onto spike ball later on when we talk about it. Right. New pair of gloves or new pair of boots?
Gloves all day long. Yeah. I obsess over gloves in terms of, washing him through the night before. Sam Johnson is exactly the same. I've seen him keep a clean sheet at the weekend against Burnley, take his gloves in the shower, wash them through, wring them out, get the kit man, can have a towel, fold it in a towel, fold it over. They go back and they're primed and ready.
Yeah.
So that, for me, that process is amazing.
On this podcast, is one of the biggest things that I advocate is looking after your tools.
Oh,
it's the most important thing for any goalie.
The worst thing in a football club is when I see a pair of crust, they go crusty and hard
on a radio,
and they're on top of the dryer, in the kit room or whatever, they're on top of a washing machine or a dryer. And I think, whoever those are, that is sacrilege.
Better not wear them in my session. Right, starter or dessert?
Starter.
Nice. And then I've got World Cup or Champions League?
I went to a World Cup, but I was just sat watching Shay Given play.
That's incredible.
But it was, I'm going to say World Cup.
Yeah. Has to be, right? And then finally, right, it's the last minute of a game. You can score a goal or save the penalty to win the game.
Save a penalty.
Yeah.
Could not be bothered about scoring
a
goal.
Not?
No.
Not at all.
Just... I've been up once in my whole career for a corner, got nowhere near it, and on the 100-yard sprint back to my goal thinking, what am I thinking?
Yeah.
What am I thinking? No, I just want to hang around my goal and do my bit.
So I've always had that Alisson dream, where he goes up and he glances ahead of and it just goes in. I just think that dream would be...
I get that.
I wouldn't know what to do with myself.
I don't think I'd know what to do.
Yeah. Right. Normally we jump straight in your earliest memories and why you're a goalkeeper. So can you take us right back to the very first moment you remember?
Yeah, I can easy. Yeah. My sort of dad's an Irish immigrant. I was born in Manchester, moved to the Midlands, which is where my mum's from. So grew up in sort of Warwick, Leamington, that sort of way. The Irish club around there, hub of that Irish community, my dad and a couple of friends. My dad never played football. Started running a team because all their children, of which I was one, sort of playing, kicking around. Started as an outfield player, played in the school, played whatever. And I'll hold my hands up. I used to get a stitch. I used to hate running.
Did you?
I'm left footed. Used to play left midfield, left back, up and down. I was like, nah, not interested. And then my old man was like, listen, stick yourself in goal, see how you go. And absolutely buzzed off it.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved it. Nothing better than you get to your back door and your mum says, take all your gear off. You're not coming in the house with all that. And you're caked in mud.
Yep.
You throw it in the washing machine, you crack on and listen, it's the best.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're not allowed to do it now, but I remember my mum and dad driving me within in the boot, I would be, because I was that muddy. Obviously, don't do that anymore, but yeah, I remember those days. They were the best days, just diving in puddles and... That is
you
proper
go and find,
goal training session.
You go and find
yeah,
mud,
would, wouldn't you?
You go and find mud. That's the whole thing. And I think that repelling and denying people of scoring a goal is incredible.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
I always say, it's the feeling of getting hurt as well, and goalies don't show when they're hurt.
Yeah. No, I agree. Listen, I played obviously with a false tooth. Used to come out. I got it kicked out like in a cow field playing under 11 football, kicked out in the 6-yard box. Went back, found it, tried to stick it in. No, I've had a plate ever since, and obviously not now. But those moments are amazing.
Yeah.
They are. There's so many painful memories. I've got a picture of me at Highbury with 2-0 down. I'm on my knees like that, looking to the heavens. It's tipping down with rain, and the pain and anguish on my face.
Yeah.
But it's my favourite picture because all the ones you're celebrating with cups and whatever and teammates.
The nice ones,
they're nice. Yeah. But that, like you would know. Everyone who plays in goal knows that moment.
Yeah, that feeling that you have, yeah.
By my.
See your goalkeeping, like going back to that from like the early age, do you reckon your old man would have put you into that because of Gaelic a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit. So my old man, no athletic ability in terms of played in team, didn't. Would probably just watch stuff like that and then propelled himself into it to promote me and other kids and whatever of Irish sort of descent. To sort of play.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was a social for them, you know, you remember Sunday football.
Yeah.
It's a social for the parents, you know, one brings the soup and this
after
that and the other.
Yeah,
that's a sort of connection there. And that was it was fantastic.
So you wouldn't have had much goalkeeper training at all at that sort of age group as well. So
no, I mean, obviously there's a time where you probably pitch up over near the corner flag where the rest of them are doing something else. And you do, you know, maybe, I don't know, a couple of parents or my dad in a very amateur way.
Yep.
So my dad used to run the team, used to run the line, used to tell me what to be doing, where to be, come and get that, stay, don't do that. You know, obviously all the classic stuff.
Yep.
The information you get, some's brilliant, some's dreadful.
Yep.
And I think as you progress through, so you play for your team, you play for your district, your school team, your county, you progress through, I suppose what you do as a young kid, the stuff that works, you stick it to you.
Yep.
The stuff that don't, you discard it.
Yep.
I suppose the ones that get sort of lost a little bit, they're probably just bamboozled with all this information, or they can't do it, they can't replicate it.
Yeah.
But for me, it sort of worked okay and I progressed through, really.
Yeah. It's sort of, at that age, all it is the fundamentals anyway, and it's learning how to dive correctly.
Definitely,
it's learning how to put your body in the right shape to make a save.
And the thing is as well, I mean... At my time was, you know, Peter Shilton, Ray Clements, Pat Jennings, you know, them sort of top ones. There wasn't much football on, but if you did see football, I remember going outside or going down the field and trying to be like Peter Shilton, because Peter Shilton was tight, agile, sort of quick reflexes. And then other times, Ray Clements, long, rangy, languid style, Pat Jennings, similar.
Yep.
And you just try and mimic it.
Yep.
You just try and mimic it. I used to have a ball, stand at the stairs, throw it up the stairs, it go boom, 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 and down towards the bottom. If it catches, it's a reaction.
Yep.
Mum and dad, put that ball away. And I'm just literally stood for an hour just doing stuff like that.
Recreating.
Sister's
stuff.
Got a tennis ball and you've got to score at the bottom of the settee, the bottom, if you hit the cushions, it's over, but there, and I'm just flying around and this, that, and the other, and you just find your way, didn't you?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. I think that's why goalies get that reputation, we're a bit mad, a bit crazy. It's because we love just doing daft stuff, like throwing yourself around in the living room. Like we're never afraid to just throw a dive in, especially as
but you know what's, you know what's good is that when you do something amazing, you just think, oh, that felt unbelievable.
Yeah.
Why did it? How did I do it? Oh, I did this, I did that, and then it sticks for the next time. Then it just becomes a habit.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, you're 12, 13, flying around and doing your thing. And that's you, you know, you're sort of...
When did you then get scouted into West Brom's academy? Because obviously, like you said, you grew up near Manchester. Like that.
Yeah, I was there till I was seven and coming down to the Midlands, which is where my mum was from. And then from there, playing Sunday football, playing five-a-side competitions, you know, scouts around came, went over to West Brom. Johnny Giles and Nobby Styles were joint managers at West Brom at the time. Obviously, Johnny Giles, the Irish connection for my dad was massive, big. It was massive. He used to drive me over. So come home from work, drive me over the other side of Birmingham up to West Brom, train on a Thursday or Tuesday, whatever it was, in a sports hall with a mat down and two traffic cones, and it'd just be literally shooting sessions and
that's
whatever.
Crazy, isn't it?
And I'm stood up the end flying around, and that's it. I mean, it sounds insane when you say it now. But it was incredible.
Yeah.
I remember as like a 13-year-old, all 13 in this sports hall doing these little drills and this, that, and the other, and there's a young, like a non-league player comes, but he works, and it's like Steve Ball. Steve Ball's 17, 18, and like hits the ball like a cannonball. And I'm stood down the other end as a 13-year-old thinking, God. And I went to school holidays, West Brom, first team players, and again, incredible. Oh, we want to do some shooting, We ain't got a goalie, Stuart Naylor's gone in, this, that, and the other. Who's he? He's got gloves on. Oh, mate, I'm done my session, I'm finished.
Yeah.
Get over here, you get in goal, like playing against like Tony Morley and people like that and taking shots.
Some ground in that 13, though, isn't it?
Yeah. 13, 14. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. See, that kind of exposure at such a young age just makes you want more of it. And I suppose then from 13 years old, you had that passion, that desire to go, and I need more.
The thing
more.
Is, you've got a link.
It becomes a drug.
You then have a link. So again, the next school holidays, the lads see you, the first team players see, hello, Dino, how you doing this? How you getting on? It's amazing.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It was an amazing place to be in and around that time. Felt a real connection to it. You know, my dad, and you know, we talk about academies now, it's a million miles from it.
Yeah. I was going to ask that obviously there's, at your era of coming through, it's totally different to how it is now. And that wouldn't be able to happen now at 13 years old. You wouldn't be able to have that connection with a first team.
No, and the first real, I suppose, the academy was the national school, the FA national school. And I was the second intake, second year.
So this is Lillyshaw, yeah?
Yeah, so I went there 14 to 16 for 2 years, residential. You live there, mate, like, it was tough, but brilliant.
Yeah,
like you're 14 years old. You
moving away from home though.
Yeah,
14.
Tough. You're doing all your laundry, all your this. You go to a local school. Everyone hates you at that school. Like, oh, look at this geezer. You know, like 16 lads rock up. They're like meant to be the best footballers in the country. Just come to your school. Like, hold on a minute. And then you're going back. You're training. You're playing games. You're doing your own laundry. You do it like you can't. You know, you're not sitting in your bedroom just doing whatever as a kid, or
there's
going
no
out with your BMX,
then,
nothing. Yeah. So it's football, 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 education, football. It's intense. I loved it.
Yeah.
People left after a short, you know, homesick, this, that, and the other. And again, there's no right or wrong with this, that, and the other. I proper loved it.
Yeah.
And by the way, it weren't all like rosy and flowers and, oh, what a great. It's tough, it's stark, harsh, you know. Yeah. I remember one game, mum and dad driving down the drive, Lillyshaw, driveway.
Yeah.
Punishment for us would be running to the gate and back and this, that, and the other. and like a coach waving at my mum and dad, this, that, and the other, and going, oi, get your kit on you. You're down at the gate and back. I don't know if we got beat or this, that, and the other. And my point is, you can dress it up however you want. For me, I'd be like, all right. And then you feel it, and it's harsh, or it's good, or it's bad, whatever it be. I like feeling them feelings.
Yeah, yeah. Do you reckon that grounding, like, it's hard, but it's also grounding to put you through a 20-year career?
Yeah, so the West. So I mean, I was a pro for 24 years, and for me, it's not always going to feel great, is it?
No.
So sometimes it's going to feel really bad and dreadful and appalling and all those sort of things. And you find a strategy. And the strategy is, God, I don't like this feeling. I don't like how it went. I don't like the outcome. I don't like what I did.
Yep.
So I've got to do something different.
Yep.
So you find something different. You try and do something different.
But to learn that at 14, 15, and like how ruthless it is in this industry, but like at that age, because you would have been with a lot of high-profile footballers that went on to have great careers, but you'd have also been some really talented players that just didn't make it because it just would have broken them.
Because, you know, at 16... You know, the best player in the country doesn't mean at 18, 20, whatever it be, he's going to be anywhere near it.
Yep.
And the turnover was, I think a lot of people through that time fell by the wayside. Yep. It didn't probably pan out how it was meant to. But for me, what it did is it amplified, it put me on a bit of a boost, because then when you go and do your apprenticeship, and by this time the West Brom situation had moved, I'd gone to Coventry.
Yep.
I signed pro at 17, so I only did 3 months apprenticeship, still did the jobs and whatever, but I signed pro at 17. Because I'd had this 2-year sort
accelerated.
Of, it had been accelerated. Yeah. And, but then for me, I coasted a little bit at Coventry.
Yeah.
I was skinny, this, that, and the other, and tall and a bit gangly and whatever, flying around, mate saves, this, that, and the other. And it was all quite comfortable. Like, I lived at home, you know, out in Warwick, out in Leamington, out in Coventry, out and about, this, that, and the other. And
I suppose because you'd missed a few years of your childhood, you then, if you move back home, you then get comfy again.
I think that's a fair point. But it was all right for a couple of years or whatever, but then you actually realise, you think, you know what, you sort of, this opportunity is going to maybe pass you by, you know.
And then obviously you had a couple of loan moves from Coventry. Obviously the York one, and then signed permanent, but like that must have had a huge bearing moving away from home again. And then
so the moving away was no issue at all, because obviously I'd done it and it was sound.
Yep.
What it was really was is that no sub goalkeeper. So Coventry, I was like youth team goalie, reserve team goalie, now and again, in and out, this, that, and the other. Steve Grzywicz, goalie at Coventry. John Sillett said to me one time, listen, oi, keep your head down, keep working out, because Oggy can't go on forever.
Yeah.
13 years later, he's still playing in the Premier League.
That's crazy, isn't it? He's big Oggy.
Brilliant. But again, what do you take from that? Look at him. He's like, I'm finished training. He's like, Dina, over here. Right, we're doing this, we're doing that. Bang, bang, bang. Like him working on this. I remember him having all the youth team in the 18-yard box, putting corners in and just coming in, taking corners and just working.
Yep.
Just working.
Yeah.
The York move for me came around. I could have went to York, Chester, and Tranmere. Keith Outchin was at Coventry.
Yeah.
He started at York. He said to me, listen, beautiful place to be, as in a city. Football club's good people, this, that, and the other. And I went there, went on loan, and signed permanent.
Yeah, you played a lot of games. You played over 200 and odd
games.
And
it was class, because I rocked up there first day as a young kid, or first, my loan move, and I looked around. It's an old dressing room, old pros. They know the way around lower leagues, and they're doing their thing, and you know, all this, that, and the other. But they finished, I think they finished in Division 4. I think they finished right near the bottom, or that way. And John Bird, Alan Little, they had a collection of younger players who they bought a few players. I played in the team, crack on, get promoted, lost in the playoffs to get into the Championship. You think York City, when you think of them now, you think, God, that was a golden era. It's unbelievable. And for me, grounding in the fact that I've been promoted out of every division.
Yep.
So that progression
from a young age because starting your career,
you know as well as I do, you know, you're in the Championship, this, that, and you're there, getting to the Premier League, and people will go, uncharted waters, never done it, you know, and I'm thinking, take your point, but let me tell you what I'm gonna revert back to, and it's them hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of games of just playing different ways, different strategies, all these challenges coming your way that you've overcome. So I was so pleased with my route and how it came, because I think if it comes young and you're not equipped to deal with it, you might play 10 games and then never be seen, and off you go and you filter back down.
So you obviously, like you're saying, that's like you end up fast tracking through a lot of promotions and stuff, but you'd have had to have adapted your game incredibly for the different leagues, the different styles, the different managers and oppositions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, obviously, all those different managers want different things from you, but ultimately, they want you to keep the ball out of the net and make a contribution. And so when you look at promotions and, like I said earlier, all the clean sheets I've kept, it's like, you're making a positive contribution to what somebody's trying to do. That keeps you in the team. That pushes you on. That promotes your sort of stock value.
Yep.
And I suppose people look, I'm 6'1". I'm probably a little bit skinny when I was a kid. If you're in opposition, you go and sling the ball. Let's have a look at him, this, that, and the other. I sit here today, nose is over here, both eye sockets, yeah, fractured my skull. Modelling career's over early on. But you know what? I wouldn't have it any other way.
No, you were never shy as well for coming for crosses.
No, listen, I think people can put... I could dress my career up as a fairy tale to you now and embellish it and this, that and the other. I know what I was.
Yep.
And you can't play for 24 years and play 759 games if you're not good at your job.
Yep.
So if you thought I was good, bad or indifferent, brilliant, no problem. I hope it's good.
Yep.
But if it weren't, no problem. I'm not too fussed. I'll be brutally honest. Couldn't care less what people think.
Yeah.
Because I know, true to myself, I know the work I had to do. I know what I had to put in to get out. And I'm really, really sat here talking to you now, comfortable with what I've done and how I did it and how I conducted myself.
Yeah, no, I love that. And then obviously from there, then from York, you played a lot of games, a lot of promotions, and then you've gone to Bury.
Yeah.
In troubled times almost for the club. It was going through a transition again.
So they'd been promoted out of League Two. I was already in League One with York. Listen, what was it? I don't know. It was on £600. I wanted £750. The chairman's like, it's about supply and demand. Like, you're not in demand. Yeah. I was like, all right, let's have a look.
Yeah.
Clubs, bigger clubs come in and, you can be our second, third squad goalkeeper, work your way in, you know, this, that and the other. I just wanted to go where people wanted me to play.
Yeah.
So I went down to Plymouth. Had a week's training there. They were going to sign, but it was in the tribunals when the conditional, unconditional was all convoluted way and whatever. Stan Turner rings me up. Gary Kelly's their goalkeeper. He's a good goalie, Gary Kelly, done well. He's now, you know, he's swinging the lead a little bit and he's got us over a barrel. He thinks he has. We've had enough of the negotiations. Do you want to come and play with us? We think we've got a real good chance, this, that and the other. I went over on a Wednesday, signed on a Thursday morning, trained Thursday, Friday, played in the first game of the season Saturday.
Yeah.
And cracked on, had three unbelievable years at Bury. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Stan Turner just created like an underdog, dirty, horrible squad of players, gifted players as well at the level. Yeah. And we went on, we went through that division, we went up, I saved a penalty at Watford, which was incredible in terms of the time. My son was born, we beat Man City 1-0 at Main Road. My son was born at 7:30
You glossed over that penalty. I was reading up about it. I remember you mainly from Cheltenham, but when I was reading up about your career and that, and like it's the 88th minute to make it, keep it 0-0 to get you promoted.
Obviously,
the question I asked you earlier on in the quick fire thing relates to you massively because you've done it.
I think Wendy Toms was the lineswoman, like a lineswoman at the time, and I see her put, you know, the cross penalty. We sort of done all this work and whatever. And then, stood my ground. Listen, all the analysis we do on penalties now, there's no better feeling than that little gut feeling or that instinct, or if there's any tell or a little whatever, go the right way, make the save. It's a big moment because what it does is it takes you into the next division.
Yep.
And the next division is, what's your audition for playing in the Championship for Bury is playing 46 games in League One to get them promoted. So you're hoping that in round the table, the boardroom table, they're going, don't need a goalie, Dino's done great, crack on.
100%,
We'll need to spend the money here, there and whatever. Me, there's a shirt, crack on. I've never played Championship, so here we go. Have a look, have a feel.
Yep.
You go early thinking, this is all right. A bit quicker, a bit sharper, you know, shots of this, that, the other. These are the challenges. Am I up to it? Well, I need to work harder at this. And it's really pragmatic.
Yeah.
Crack on. Next level, you achieve it. Feels good. Same. I'm sure you're the same.
Yep. Yeah, obviously,
you need to be switched on, as
100%,
in, what does it feel like? If it feels good and you're comfortable, you can do it. Then you turn the screw even more and you go, well, oh, hold on, this ain't the end, this ain't the finish, this is not the peak, I can go on.
Yeah, like I was saying earlier, like those moments of luck in your career, but like saving that penalty, if you don't save that penalty and you don't get promoted that year, you don't know the possibilities that happen later down the line. And so like having that such a key moment and being at such a...
It's good to be in control of them moments.
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
So like you say, if he scores the penalty, well, I've got a part to play in that.
Yeah.
You know, I can make that save.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm now harping back going, God, if only this had gone this way or this had gone that way and I'm bleating on a little bit and telling you what might have been, that is a different route, absolutely. Yeah. But again, we're in control, aren't we?
Yeah, to exactly. A point. Yeah, throughout your career, you had a real knack of saving penalties at important games and big moments, didn't you? You'd say about the analysis that we do now as goalkeepers and as coaches, how stark contrast was that from back then?
I mean, there is no comparison because what would I...
You would have had no video analysis.
No video analysis. You would probably see some goals or you'd know who would take a penalty. You'd get a feeling or this, that and the other, and you just back that sort of feeling.
Your instinct. So you're going off pure instinct at the time when they're putting the ball down, where they're looking, their body shape.
A little bit, yeah. And then all happens, penalty's given, what happens? All your teammates are going, come on, you, hey, come on, this, that and the other. Somebody in your team who might know the fella, you know, that one behind him going that way or that way or whatever, and you think, is he a solid geezer? You know, is he a solid fella? Is he telling me the right? Is he giving me a good steer or do I back myself? Yeah. Or so there's all them twists and turns. But like now, obviously, had some good moments. Obviously, Callum Wilson scored for Newcastle the other day. When we played Newcastle, they didn't have a penalty, but the process that we go through, and sometimes the taker himself might not know his little tell, or he might not know his rhythm or whatever, but it's down to you to... There might not be one.
Yeah, there might not be. Yeah.
We can have a look for one.
Yeah.
And it was interesting that his penalty they had after we played him, I said to Sam, I said, what did we say? Where did we say he was going to go? And he said, oh, he said he was going to do this, this and this. And he did in a game after.
Yeah.
So you're quite content that it's not come up in your game, but your process is solid.
Yep.
And then away with Ireland, we played Portugal away, Gavin Bazunu saved Ronaldo's penalty. Yes. And that was, we trawled through it as all of us, the three goalies and myself and the analysis guys. And you go in, when he walks into it, he opens and he goes that way. When he, that little half moon and revs his feet up, he looks like he's going to slap it back the other way. Now, it's not 100% going to be that way.
No, no.
But what needs to happen is in that room, we go, are we all comfortable with that?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm not sure yet. But listen, what about this? What about that? Nice process. Good, open discussion. Right, when we walk out, if this happens, are we all committed to doing this? Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Penalty comes his way. Right, and you're sat there. I'm no control because, what, I've got a coach's tracksuit on and I'm 100 yards away. You see him rev his feet. You see him slap it back the other way. You see Gav go that way, make the save. I mean...
It pays off.
That's a nice feeling.
Yeah, I bet it is. Yeah.
And you feel for
Gavin. The way that you've involved the whole of the other goalkeepers and that, and you've all come to that decision, you then all feel part of that union that we all harp on about.
So it goes back to, and you're listening, how many times do you see the sub-goalkeeper giving a little like that?
Yeah.
And, you remember that and this, that, and the other, this is what we're doing. Yeah. And then the first one to celebrate with.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the other goalie.
Yeah.
Now, that for me is shows you the environment's right, you've created, they've all bought into it, and they're all invested.
Yeah.
And don't listen, let's not make it crude about us, our win bonuses, this, that, and the other status. You all want to be successful.
That's all
you
it is.
You just want to be successful.
Every footballer and every person should, that's all it boils down to, is you want your team to do well. And like, obviously, like myself right now, not currently in the team, all I care about is the performance and the team doing well.
Yeah.
Whether I'm playing or not playing, obviously I get frustrated sometimes that I'm not, and I still want to play as many games as possible. But at the end of the day, I want us to win.
Yeah.
I want to be part of something that's successful, and that's all it is.
And also, in our own environment, your parents, your family, your friends, your this, that, and the other, when you're winning, you're bright, you're light, you've got a good way about you because things are good, and they're good because you're making a contribution.
Yeah.
That's just how it should be, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, right. Let's go back to your career and that. Right, I want to go to Charlton now because this is obviously where I say I remember you most from. But
yeah.
I just, that era of watching the Premiership at the time, and like I loved footy. That's when I think I was first like, right.
What age were you been?
I'm 37 now.
Right, okay.
So like I remember, it's a long time ago, but I just remember that whole era of football. I'm a big Tottenham fan, but I grew up in South London, like I said. So
yeah.
I'd have been watching Palace play. I went to a lot of Cheltenham, whatever my dad could get us tickets for.
Yeah, we were going to football. Just want to go and see.
And then
you'd
go home that night and watch Match of the Day. It was like, that was like the era that I grew up thinking football is amazing.
Yeah.
And obviously you go into Cheltenham at that time and you had such a successful period.
Yeah, I think Bury were in the Championship. Bury got relegated. I think I kept 19 or 17 clean sheets in a relegation season.
Yeah.
Like it was mental that season. But what it did do was a platform for me to show people. Mervyn Day at Cheltenham obviously had looked and gone. Sasha Ilić was in the team. Yeah. They'd got relegated back into the Championship. And he said, if you do what you've been doing there with a better club, better players and whatever, going to deliver you into. And we went in and we ripped up the Championship.
Yeah.
My first season in there, played majority of the games, got into the Premier League. And obviously that's what I'd been striving for over a long period of time. And that route and how it gets you there was unbelievable. I came home, big celebration, holidays, this, that and the other. Ready to go again. I said to my missus, shave my hair off. I want a number one. And she was like, what? I was like, I don't want to worry about how I look, all this and the other. It's just about football. This opportunity now is, I just want this to last as long as possible.
Yeah.
And I just want to give it as much.
Just mean business, yeah.
Mental.
Yeah.
But like, I want to be my tooth out, number one. I just want to be... It's going to be horrible.
Yeah.
I was going to say ugly. I mean, that's easy for me to do.
It's amazing that you had that mentality, that you just want to just strip it right back and just concentrate on everything. 100%. You give everything you had to making sure you're the best at that stage.
100%. And that was it, is the fact that there's no point striving for that to achieve that. And then when it comes, you just go,
take your foot off.
And relax.
Yeah.
Good. Everything's good.
Done it now.
Because when I look back and I think, he played in the Premier League, played 6 games. Or I remember that geezer. Oh, yeah, he played 4 games in, never heard of him. You know, so what I'm saying is they achieved, but they went boom and then just went out like a light. I don't mean it to anyone's detriment. So what I'm saying is when I got there, I didn't want to let the opportunity.
Just the no excuses environment that you're creating for yourself.
Yeah.
That's amazing that you had that mentality.
Yeah, and from that I got like a bit of sports psychologist involved and this, that and the other. Just myself individually, just found a way.
Yeah.
Now, even coming here this morning, I apply some of them techniques in terms of what's it going to look like? What's it going to feel like? What if this happens? What do I do? How do I react? This, that and the other. What if you ask me that question? All that, just rehearsing.
Yeah.
I just want to rehearse everything I want to do.
That's just self-development the whole time then. You were trying to... You had a goal to achieve, but you were developing your skills and everything about you to get to that moment, and you didn't want to take your foot off to underachieve.
You said about like them sliding door things. Imagine getting into the Premier League, playing 10 games in that season, Charlton getting relegated, and that'd be it. You know, those twists, you'd feel gutted that you hadn't give it.
Yep.
Or if there was more that you could have done
after
the event. So, listen, for me, never in a relegation battle with Charlton, I think... The times I was playing in Premier League, 7th, 9th, 14th, 12th, 11th.
Incredible for Cheltenham,
For Cheltenham. The amazing thing is, and I see Kerbs now and again, I didn't give him the credit at the time. Me and Chris Powell used to room together and we're going like, Kerbs is so lucky, he's got us. Like we just get it done, we're low maintenance, we get it. But he recruited him.
Yeah.
He recruited the team. Him, Mervyn Day, Keith Peacock, they put the team together. And obviously we went out and delivered and this and the other. But happy being underdogs.
Yeah. That's what I remember about Cheltenham is that they were no one's favourite team at the time.
Oh, 100%. And listen, 27,000 people in there. What was it? 18,000 season tickets, 3,000 away, 21. The other 5 or 6, they want to see the Premier League.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, they
live
in Eltham, wherever, and they want to see Wayne Rooney and this, that and the other, and Henry and this, that and the other, but coming with their local team.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
Full house every week. Seeing Premier League, seeing that product, but also seeing a team. And we were, like I say, so comfortable being underdogs.
Yep.
You know, upsetting people, beating Arsenal at Highbury, beat Arsenal, Chelsea on Boxing Day, beating them 4-2. The list, it just goes on and on and on. And all of a sudden it becomes, Well, it wasn't just a little flash in the pan. This was over a long period of time.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, you know, you talk about golden eras, and that sort of coincided with my probably best period sort of in my late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah, do you reckon that that's the time that the dressing rooms were changing? You obviously, Charlton at that time had a real siege mentality that you looked like you were all in it together. But obviously, like you're saying, like Kerbishley had put all these players together and it recruited personalities, if not most... And it wasn't just about the talent, but football as a whole was kind of changing, weren't it? The professionalism aspect was changing around that era.
I mean, I was probably right on the cusp of it. Is that then the video analysis come in, and there was meetings in terms of opposition and reviews and all them sort of things. And listen, they'd always previously be done, but they're just verbally or stood in a huddle on a Monday morning and, you know, on a training ground. But yeah, it started to evolve. And again, you embrace what you want to embrace from it. Yeah. So the sports psychologist for me was big deal. I didn't have many rubs or whatever it be, but what I would be, when I'm at home, I'm watching the television, sat on the floor, constantly stretching.
Yep.
And I love, you know, and we spoke this morning, people go, oh, you know, you're lucky with injuries. And I'm like, yeah. And then inside going, well, I contributed to the luck.
Yep.
Because you don't see me doing this, doing that, swimming, whatever it be. Yep. You know, all those little edges that you want to give yourself. Again, for longevity.
Yeah.
For longevity, because when it finishes, it finishes.
Yeah.
You're done.
Yeah.
There's no coming back.
No, and naturally, goalkeepers, we're big competitors anyway. So if we feel like we're going to gain something or get an edge or be better from it, we'll just try it. And no matter how absurd it will seem to others, and like I said to you before, like I gave up meat like 7 years ago.
Yeah.
But again, it's because I got told from a specialist and it was like, this could be better for your career. I was like, well, I'll do it.
So why wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Correct.
So, yeah. And it just became an addiction almost of like, right, well, that will get me through. I'll get fitter from that. I'll prolong my career. And I was like, right, well, it became like an ongoing joke with me and the missus. It's like, oh, we'll get to like birthday and then it'll get to Christmas. So I was like, now I just go, I'll get to the end of my career.
Yeah.
And like, that's the ongoing joke. It's like, my kids go to me, when will you meet again? Like, end of my career, that'll do.
Yeah.
Like,
I'll know. And that's perfect. That's how it should be.
Yeah. And like, obviously, you're saying, I loved watching you at Charlton at that time. And I think that era, again, it was just, football was tough as nails, but there was also those moments of brilliance. And I think, like I say, in your half volley was like one of them that I remember looking back at it going, God, I'd love to be able to do that. And I'd go away and I'd work at it.
Yeah, you're okay.
Obviously, it's a skill that now, I still do it in training now, and I'm still working on a half volley because no one does it. And it's like a throwback, but I think all goalkeepers should have every tool. And even at 37, I'm going, I still need that tool just in case.
Yeah, so at Lillishaw when I was 14, take a bag of balls into one of the halls and there's the basketball but that come down and you'd just be hit the backboard with a half volley and you'd have a bag of 10 balls.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, when you do that, then you'd go off a side and you'd just try and shape it round and like slice it or hook it or whatever, just to have that control.
Yeah.
Just to have that control and you just hone that skill.
Yeah.
But like I say, the odd time it doesn't work, but in the main, it's still hanging around.
Yeah. See, like you're saying about honing a skill, like I've always done it with my left foot. I'll warm up the goalkeeper on a match day, and I'll warm up if they've got left footed cross takers, I'll put left footed crosses in.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm right footed goalkeeper, but in training that week, if I know that they've got a striker, I'll be shooting with my left foot for them, just so that they get that repetition.
Brilliant.
Of
it's
replicating what they're going to expect on
a Saturday.
What's
coming their way.
And but that's me working on my own ability to help somebody else.
So
it's like a double-edged, it's a skill for both of us.
Yeah, it's class.
And I've never gone away from that. I've always looked at the opposition about, right, who have they got? Who have they got on the wing that side? I'll do crosses left-footed in swing of that side.
Yeah.
Or they'll cut back in and that's the shot that they'll face. And I always think that You'll definitely be doing this as a goalie coach.
Absolutely,
but if you naturally would have goalkeepers that are left footed or right footed, you'll be putting them to one side and going, you're doing this effort, you're doing this shot, cross.
No, absolutely. And that little detail is it.
Yeah.
Because if it's just a generic environment doing generic things, it just dilutes.
Yeah.
Really.
You're only going to get the same outcome.
Yeah. And I think I like the way of looking. So for example, you know, Ray Lewington's thing about, you know, your Man City's and your Liverpool's and your Arsenal, they get into those areas and the ball comes through that near post.
Yep.
And it comes through and then they get tap-ins at the back post because they threaten that area. And then he's seen me one time doing similar drills, mannequin 6 yards away. There's that gate between the near post and there. me dressing up deliveries, putting them through, asking them questions, and wanting them to come and get involved.
Yep.
Because I think if you're passive on that near post and you just square off,
getting ready to turn,
all of a sudden it's a 3 or 4 yard thing away from you. You think, oh, we should have gone for that now.
Yep.
So just drilling in. And he would then pick me and go, oh, he said, that's brilliant. That. He said, because that's exactly the position. And I remember playing with Man City, and then they're thrusting it through, and like, you know, whoever the goalie, you know, Wayne Hennessy, whoever it be, making those saves, and raise this big, positive, massive, loud, booming voice, and turn around to the bench and go, Dino, you went, that's it. That's the one for Monday. And like, you're like, nobody knows what you're on about.
Yep.
Apart from
the
people that need to know.
Yep.
But they're the feelings
yep.
that you go, yeah, there's no camera, there's no nothing. That's why I'm doing it. That's what I hope is the outcome comes from it, is that you expose your goalie to, and he makes that save, and it looks really comfortable, and all the Man City players go, oh, I got that.
Yeah.
And then you've got a coach, an outfield, like, with wealth of experience going, that's it, Dino, that's the one I'm looking at. So it's brilliant.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's the skill of a goalkeeper coach, is you're put into sessions throughout the week, muscle memory, so that when it comes to a Saturday, they don't. Sometimes the goalkeeper, myself included, will not know that why we've done that drill that week. But
correct.
Then come on a Saturday, and there'll be like a cross to the back post, and you've been working on them all weeks, like subtly, and you'll never know why. But then you'll come and get
but
3 or 4.
You feel comfortable getting there.
And then it eliminates so many opportunities during the game. And after the game, you're like, oh, I did quite well on the back post today. And like your goal coach will be like, all week we've had that in our session.
But that's the best way. Because I think that commanding coach of, okay, everyone come in, listen to me, I'm going to talk and tell you everything I know, that is not probably the way now.
Yep.
So it's just that one. And there's not, like you say, there's no better feeling of doing something, dressing it up, putting it in a way where it just, they absorb it without you going, oh, by the way, we're doing A, B and C because we need this. It's just they do it. They feel it. They're comfortable doing it. They naturally do it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Right, I want to finish off with the rest of your career before we do our quiz, right? So obviously from Charlton, absolute club legend, really, and like the way that you establish yourself at that club. To then move clubs, it must have been a hard time to go to Portsmouth.
Yeah, it was massive. It was massive more for my family. Yeah. Remember, my missus was like distraught. You know, the kids are there. We're all settled. We've got a great, you know, sort of life in around the area. And I'm like, I don't want to stay here if I'm not playing. So go to Portsmouth. They're in a right pickle, you know, real tough spot. They sign myself, Pedro Mendes, who was insane in that season, Sean Davis, Noah Paramo, a couple of players. They had a collection. They had like 40 players, and it was
a big collection.
Incredible.
Yeah,
it didn't feel like the Charlton situation. It just felt like a loads of things thrown in. But do you know what? When I look back, played 17 games the back half of that season from January onwards. Stayed up. People sort of about great escape, this, that and the other. And it sort of was. And then you just get picked up, discarded and this, that and the other. And like, for example, like Joe Jordan, the coach there, when we're winning and on this great escape and this great run, and I'm flying around making saves, making a contribution, you know, Dino, oh, brilliant. Dino. The next season, David James comes in. And I'm keeper. He's calling me keeper. It's not my name. It's my position. It's not my name.
Yeah.
Right? And he just discarded, throw away. Hey, keeper. I was like,
Joe,
4 months ago, like, you were all over me.
Yeah.
Like, just be constant.
Yeah.
I'm not bothered whether you like me, dislike me or whatever. But obviously when I was doing something well for you, I'm Dino.
Yep.
Now you don't need me. I'm keeper. Appalling. It's a dreadful situation. And probably from then, obviously, JMO gets in the team. No problem at all. Pick who you want. Couldn't care less. And then that was me. I went to Luton on loan, knowing that I was going to West Brom because they said to me, would I come in January?
Yep.
And I said, yeah. And to get up to speed, I went to Luton, played sort of 2 or 3 months there.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it. Got back up to speed. January went to West Brom. And I was at West Brom for 8 years.
Yeah.
I was at West Brom for longer than Charlton.
Yeah.
People probably put me in synonymously with Charlton.
Yeah.
But I was at West Brom for 8 years as a player, coach and a coach.
Yeah.
So my missus reminds me all the time, painful time. It was a painful time. But the little twists and turns and the route you take took me to sat here today. Yeah. And comfortable with the route.
At West Brom, then, I just want to talk about that. You end up making your 700th appearance for them. I think it was that season you also kept 18 clean sheets and you got the Golden Glove. Where people think that you're winding down towards the back end of your career, you didn't seem to.
Yeah, so when I had this finger injury, I had like a fracture dislocation, came up, had it all in traction, and there's a few people going, and I think must have been in Kerb's ear, going, listen, that's him, done.
Yeah.
I said, oh, brilliant, he's been brilliant, but done. So I'd rather prove people right, but the odd time you think, oh, listen, I'm going to prove people wrong, or try to, and this and the other. So stayed in, stuck it, Portsmouth thing came, little flash, there's a nice positive, stay up there, West Brom comes your way, need to get in Premier League, this and the other. I do, play them games, keep that, make that contribution, fantastic. Scott Carson comes in, so obviously I get replaced.
Yeah.
Tony Mowbray is like, listen, 37, 38, you know, you're not the long-term view. Totally get it, no problem. So that was the first taste of your status is changing.
Yeah.
And shifting. And then as it transpired along the way, Joe Corrigan was retiring. I think he was 65 at the time. Great,
yeah.
Great guy. And he threw my name and he said, look, my replacement, he said, you should give him a shot. And Tony Mowbray was like, do you want to coach? And I was like, hadn't thought about it, not really. And I was like, what do I know about coaching?
Yeah.
When you don't realise it, but as an old pro, and you're probably right in it now.
Yep.
Is he's saying you don't know you're coaching, but you're coaching every day.
Yep.
So you're coaching with your words and your actions and your sort of status in the group.
Yep.
And also then you're picking someone and say, oh, listen here, when this happens, da da da. He went, you're coaching, you just don't know.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
I went home and had a think about it, and it kept me in. Because I think if you come out,
yep,
you know, these people, I'm going to have a year out, and I'm thinking, that sounds amazing.
Yep.
But I bet after 3 months you're thinking, oh, my year might be a bit long.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking for a way in. Because
and it's hard to get back
in. I signed pro in 1987.
Yep.
And when I left West Brom in 2015, I had 6 weeks out before I went in at Norwich. That's the first time I've been out of the game since 1987 as a professional.
Yep.
So in 2015, I had a six-week sabbatical enforced.
Yeah.
They're like, thanks for everything, but we don't need you no more. And you just want to get back in. So I don't want a year out.
Yeah.
What do I want to do?
Yeah.
Like, what else do I know? I
do that when you fully retire.
I just want to go and do the thing that I think I'm relatively good at.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's what you know, what you love. It's like I was saying before at the start, like you clearly got a massive passion for goalkeeping, and you love what you do. So it's so good to see like someone that's had the career that you've had, but still want to give back to the game. And I think that like that shouldn't be taken for granted either. Is how much you've done in the game, but you want to educate the next lot and you want to pass on that knowledge and like your wealth of experience and what you brought to football.
Yeah, I just want them to kick on and get on, and all the things, the trials, tribulations coming their way, I want to be able to help and give them a little nudge and point them in the right direction and just giving them an environment to go and do their thing. So yeah, that's good.
Part and parcel.
Yeah.
Right, let's do our quiz then, right? So I briefed you a little bit about it before. It's goalie or no goalie is the answer, right? So it's 1 point for each answer, correct answer. It's 5 international current goalkeepers. So they're either in the last squad. So there'll be 1, 2 or 3 of the goalkeepers.
So whatever you think of my, from the start of this to now, I think, I think I'm going to let myself down badly here. But
you've got
to see how we go. So there's 5.
5, and then 5 made up names or like celebrity names or like... Some of them might be, you might know, you might not know. It's just,
we're going to find out. Anyway.
Yeah. So I'm terrible at keeping the score. So this makes my life so much easier.
Got you.
Right. You can head over to YouTube and check out our leaderboard. But let's crack on, yeah?
There's a leaderboard.
There is a leaderboard, yeah. So 4's the worst. Emily Ramsey's got 10. Selzy got 7 and cried about it, mate.
I have heard...
So all of them are people that should sound like goalkeepers' names, and but all of them have been in their last international squads, and like some of them have been the first choice in Selzy's one.
Oh right,
and he was fuming.
So he put a different spin on it.
Yeah, that's the spin that he wanted to put on it.
Yeah,
he was gutted. It made me laugh immensely.
Good. Yeah,
it served a great purpose.
Yeah, it should do.
Right, so number one. Giovanni Pernice.
That's a goalkeeper.
That is not a goalkeeper. He's a professional dancer on Strictly.
Oh yeah, I remember him. Yeah.
So again, like your memory will go, I've heard that name.
Yeah.
So this is the whole point of the quiz.
And great start for you.
Yeah, exactly. So right, we'll go number two, Arsene Beglarian.
That's a goalkeeper.
He is a goalkeeper. He is the Armenia goalkeeper. Do you recognise the name or?
We played Armenia.
Yeah. I think, so when I do my research about you and about like the teams that you've coached against, I think he was one of them. I was like, right, I'll find out if he remembers it.
And thankfully I did.
Yes,
or did I
did.
Guess? We don't know.
We don't know. We'll never know. Right, number three, Chris Van Allsburg.
That's not a goalkeeper.
He's not a goalkeeper. That's correct. He is the writer and illustrator of children's book, The Polar Express. So again, I've never made up random names.
Yeah, right? I mean,
you're
I'm aware of his
that.
Work.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, okay.
Number four, Nawaf Al Akwidi.
If I get this wrong, I can,
yeah, you can
blame
do it
with pronunciation,
yeah.
But I won't. I'm going to say that's a goalkeeper.
He is a goalkeeper. He is the Saudi goalkeeper, and he actually plays for Al Nassr with Cristiano. Good start
he'll
so far.
Shouted, he'll get shouted at by Cristiano Ronaldo.
100%, yeah. 100. Imagine after every game, every goal that goes in.
I would imagine
the arms flying.
Ronaldo up on the halfway line going, like,
yeah,
what?
Yeah. So. Well, he has played with quite a high calibre of goalie, so I think he can hold most people
that's
to
true.
The sword. Right. Number five, Chris Rudder. Chris Rudder.
Oh, now, see, he's a goalie.
He's not a goalkeeper. Oh. He is the founder of Spikeball.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well done, you. That is brilliant.
Yeah. He is the founder of Spikeball. Right, before we carry on with this quiz, can we talk about Spikeball?
Yeah, 100%.
You love Spikeball.
I absolutely love it.
You've had that viral sensation at Norwich of like you and the lads playing Spikeball.
Yeah, so my son filmed that with his drone and that's what he does and this, that,
can
and
you just explain to the audience what Spikeball is?
So Spikeball is that little trampet net. Yeah. The actual game is with a small, real light ball, like a tennis ball type thing. And one of the lads at West Brom, a coach, Jimmy Shan, said, I've seen this thing, it'd be amazing for goalies to brought it in. We played it as a staff, like a couple of coaches, me, Matt Naylor, who's at Villa now, who's the academy coach, played it. And it didn't translate because the ball was too light.
Okay.
And the net was really flimsy.
Yeah.
And it was like, but with a trampet and a smaller football, this could be a thing.
Yeah.
And it's incredible.
Yeah.
Because, and we played it yesterday, the lads, the first thing they say, they go like, oh, playing Spikeball today. Yeah, we'll go out 15 minutes early. Yeah, no problem. Who's partner? This, who you going to pick this? And, oh, we'll have a rematch this. It's incredible, the reaction it gets.
Yep.
But it's like you said about not knowing when you're doing something. These lads fly around, will go full stretch, go fetch balls and keep things alive. And you think they don't know they're doing goalkeeping.
Yeah, the dynamic movement, the quickness of feet, the hand position.
So when I see a goalie right on top of it with a reaction, you think, that's what we're doing. And then when I see them go and fetch a big spike where they go over their shoulder, how they turn and drive and thrust away, go and fetch the ball. And then job's not done, got to go and support his mate and do our thing. And it's brilliant. And the best thing is, I always play.
Yeah.
And again, I want to be involved.
Yeah.
I'm not reffing it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm playing it.
Yeah, you're playing, yeah.
It's a great game.
Yeah.
It's a great game.
Proper game for goalies.
So
I love
can
it.
I just tell you, and I don't know if we've got the time
of course you have.
So with my Apple Watch, playing it now, I made a dive and it was even self-praise is no praise.
What warning did you get?
I made a dive and my Apple Watch said to me, it appears like you've had a fall. And I was literally, I hated my watch.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I'm a goalie. This is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But it said I'd had a fall.
Even your Apple Watch is stereotyping you at your age. Yeah. Nice that. It's typical. Right. I'm buzzing. I got that one in there.
Yeah. Well done. Excellent.
All right. Number six, Franco Israel.
He's not a goalie.
He is a goalie. He is a Uruguay and Sporting Lisbon goalkeeper.
You know what? Since you just threw the spike ball in, I've just gone to pop.
Yeah, just got so excited talking about spike ball. I don't mind that though.
Yeah.
Right, number seven, Henrik Ravas.
He's a goalie.
He is a goalie. He is a Slovakia goalkeeper. He's actually the number two to Big Oblak.
Okay.
Yeah. He was at Derby. I didn't even know that myself in my own research.
He was young at Derby.
Yeah, he must have been. Right, well, you're on four. Yes.
So I'm not the worst.
You're not the worst.
How many have we got left?
You've still got three to go. Could easily catch Selzy's score.
I don't know if I want to, you know.
Number eight, Gordon Sumner.
Gordon Sumner is the lead singer of New Order or The Police.
Better known as?
Sting.
Sting.
Yeah.
Sting, correct.
Do you know why I said New Order? Because that's Bernard Sumner.
Oh, right, okay. He showed a tie in. Got it right anyway.
Yeah.
Good knowledge, that. Very good knowledge.
It's early 80s, isn't it?
Exactly. I thought I'd chuck
him. I'm stuck in that time war.
I thought I'd chuck one in for you there. Nice. Right, number nine, Fernando Duarte.
Oh, this is a bit like the Strictly Dancer, because I've heard the name, but in what line or field? I like the way you're giving zero
nothing
away.
Yeah, I've got a great poker face.
Brilliant from you. I am going to say he is a goalkeeper.
He is not a goalkeeper.
Yeah, where do I know him from?
You actually, I don't know if you do, but his name is Fernando Nando's.
Oh, well played.
He is the co-creator of restaurant better known as Nando's. Yeah, Fernando.
Yeah,
Duarte.
You did.
Yeah.
See, now when you've really emphasised the Nando bit.
Fernando
Duarte. Yeah, if you'd have done that. Oh, God. Okay. Right. That's fine.
Last one, number 10, Dorian Raelian.
Ah, see, now if I was clever, I could have counted
up. You could have counted, but that's the whole point.
Why didn't I count?
Yeah, exactly. You could try.
Why didn't I count? He's a goalkeeper.
He is a goalkeeper.
Yeah, you know,
5 out of 10, Dino. That's not bad.
Ah, steady.
Because you're right in the middle. You could have just went goalie for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not that type of guy.
No, it defeats the point of the quiz.
I'm not that type of guy. I can't do that.
5 out of 10. That's not too bad.
And I listen, I really enjoyed that and puts me, what is it, middle of the road.
Was it 6 out of 10? 6 out of 10, correction. That's better, that. Oh, you're happy.
I mean, yeah.
Flying there.
That's made it a great day.
Yeah, right. So now let's... playing for the Republic of Ireland, obviously you represented England schoolboys and that, but
yeah.
As you said, your family and your dad being Irish.
Yeah, so played England schoolboys, went to Lillishaw, obviously. One of the games at Stoke, we played Republic of Ireland. I remember my dad going to Maurice Setters, who was the Ireland manager. He's like, oh, Kylie, is it not? But I suppose back then there wasn't that. You know, you're not casting your net out. Obviously, the Irish then went on to, under Jack Charlton and whatever, as recruit and, sort of second generation and whatever. Playing away, I didn't get the shout till late 20s.
Yeah.
Really, I was at Bury and whatever. It was incredible.
Yeah.
Huge honour, massive honour for my family and people, associated with me in that respect. And enjoyed it. 11 caps. I don't know if this is going to be controversial.
Two retirements as well.
Yeah, listen, I don't know if it's got controversial. I'll say it is that it's a huge honour. It's incredible. I buzzed off the whole thing. But then it became like I'm playing in the Premier League. Mick McCarthy, great fella. I really enjoyed playing under him. Could 11 caps been 20? Yeah, easily. Shea was chasing his and going over 100 and... Again, Shay, amazing goalie, amazing lad. Really, really enjoyed being around. Learned lots from him. But then sometimes you've probably got to be a bit selfish and go, I think it was, went to Georgia away, Albania away, and obviously you're flying around. Oh, need some crossing, doing some shooting. Oh, the lads want some shooting. It's me flying around, this, that, and the other. Go back to, get back to Charlton on a Thursday, train. Shattered there, play on a train on Friday, play Leeds on a Saturday, get absolutely spanked at the Valley 6-1.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this ain't conducive to me
being
sustaining
the best you can be,
and leaving the thing. Now, I'm sure people are going to listen to this and go, oh my God, I'd give my right arm, this, that, and the other. But it's also my profession.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, I didn't win a competition to do that. I earned it. I lived it, I went through and it was amazing. But it produced 11 caps for me, which I'm hugely proud of. But there was just a period where it just felt like I need to focus on this club career, because I want this to go on as long as possible.
But I listening to what you said about when you shaved your head and you took your tooth out and like you wanted to be the best that you could be at the highest level that you could be. And if you felt like something else was having a detriment, and obviously the travelling and doing more shooting drills than you'd ever done, like why would you then create more bad opportunities for yourself? You want to be the best you can be for the club and for at the level that you want to play at.
Yeah, and I think probably, I don't know, what's the tipping point? 11 caps was okay for me to be Shea's backup number two, whatever it be, and be around it, get the odd game, play in this and the other. And when I played, it was huge.
Yeah.
Massive, massive, massive thing. Went to a World Cup in 2002 as a squad player, like I say, back up behind Shea. And again, my wife, my eldest boy, my dad went out. So for all those people associated,
yeah, amazing. You
know, amazing memories and this, that, and the other. And also for me, I enjoyed it. But again, it's simple. When I look back, I don't celebrate much. We went up as champions, West Brom. You can see the back of my head. Norwich as a coach. We get promoted through the playoff final. You can see my forehead. I'm not the one spraying champagne going, hey, look at me at the front. I don't celebrate very well.
Yeah.
So people might perceive that as, oh, what a huge honour. I can't believe this. Can't believe that. Oh, why did he retire? Whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird.
But amazing time, really positive.
That just says to me that you'd never get too high, never too low, though.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I'm sure you'll agree is that your temperament is massive in goalkeeping. And probably when I look back, can you celebrate a bit more? Can you enjoy it? Can you be a bit more? I don't know. Probably can.
Yeah.
But I chose not to. I had a choice. I chose not to.
Yeah.
So that's just the natural way of it. So happy with that, I suppose.
And now getting now you're the actual Republic of Ireland goalie coach as well. No, it's nice that you've been able to come back to it.
Well, it's good. And listen, the one thing I do know is how to be a squad goalkeeper in that. So the frustrations of others in and around, I say, listen, see this fella here. This is 8 or 10 years of that.
Yeah.
You know, but again, broad big picture, your status is elevated by being an international goalkeeper. Stay in and around, this, that, and the other, all them sort of things. And for me to coach, I mean, my first trip was Darren Randolph was injured. I think Quevin Kelleher was injured. And Matt Travers, Gavin Bazunu, that was his first camp. And Kieran O'Hara, I think it was at Burton at the time, was in. Three of them, this is my first camp. Let's go. A lot of noise from other people around and not involved was, you know, Dan Randall's experienced goalie, car without him and this one and that one and that one. And I'm literally like, I'm fresh in. This is great for me. I'm loving it. So again, great progression for me.
Yeah.
Coaching it on an international level. And then see these young lads come in and fly around and give of their best and this thing. It's brilliant.
Yeah, amazing.
Absolutely brilliant. And for me now, I look and I go, Gavin Bazunu, Quevin Kelleher, Matt Travers, Max O'Leary. Whether I'm here for a day, a year, 10 years, whatever it be, that position for the next 10, 12, 10 whatever years is set. Because these boys are top elite goalkeepers.
Yeah.
And for me to have that opportunity to be in and around and coach them has been brilliant for me.
Is it a different type of coaching for you from day to day than obviously when you go away with Ireland?
Totally, because try and link in with our goalkeeper coaches.
Yep.
I don't send emails and reports and all that sort of thing. I just want to say to them, I just want to talk to you about your goalie. I'll give you some feedback. If you want to give me some little steers and this, you know, brilliant, and we go on. The rhythm is different because, for example, the day before an international game, you train at the stadium, the UEFA geezer presses his stopwatch and you have 1 hour.
Yeah.
So you can't be hanging around, oh, I'm just going to do some crossing. It is tight, it is regimented, you've got to be right on it. We don't have a lot of time goalkeeping wise.
Yep.
So you gotta cram it in. You make your apologies. Listen, lads, we ain't got half an hour, we've got 15 minutes.
We've got a microwave warm up today, yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, different rhythm, got a different feel. But again, just those relationships.
Also,
what do I need to do? I need to provide a positive environment for the goalies to give of their best and perform of their best.
Yeah. Also, you've got to structure your training differently to different goalkeepers' needs.
Yeah, 100%.
So your day-to-day at Crystal Palace at the moment, working with like Dino and Sam and Remy, and like you're doing training drills that you know are specific for them. But then when you throw in three different total goalkeepers into that mix, and you've got to go, well, he needs this. This is what makes him better on a Saturday.
And the knack, and again, you'll be in the same position as the knack is feeling, exploring, asking.
Yep.
And when it works and they respond well, stick that one, that stays in, needs to be in. If something feels a bit, it's not right, it didn't feel right, discard.
Yep.
Don't be precious. It's not about me. I've no coaching ego about anything.
Yep.
Not about me. Let's fit and get it into them. Or, you know, the odd like, bit of bursitis or a bit of this, haven't you, though? So
no diving left, no this, that, and the other, let's restrict that, you know, let's only expose it when it needs to be, all those sort of things. You're just computing.
Yeah.
And it's just computing quickly, and it's just feeling and getting it, and then all of a sudden you're delivering something that they're all comfortable with, but you've got to do that quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
That's got to be quick, because what, you camp September,
yep,
October, November, March, you know, so
yeah, yeah,
you're in, it's amplified, microwaved in, and off you go.
So yeah, so then go back into club football then. Is it a lot, obviously it'll be easier, but to structure your week, you'll know your opposition weeks in advance and yeah, months in advance. How far ahead are you looking to structure your week and look at the opposition, yeah, and start bringing that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I suppose you get a feeling for the over the month, but certainly what I like to do is that week prep, what it looks like and what it is realistically trying to look like,
yeah,
against the opposition. And then you play the game, good, bad, or indifferent. You review, assess, think what it is. But again, I like to discard quickly, yeah, and go from, I mean, you know, sort of, we play Everton this week, so emphasis on crossing, this, that, and the other in that respect. And then when you play Man City, you know, there's no deep crosses, there's no this, that, and the other. The line of the defenders, they're right on top and this, that, and the other. So you're striking through mannequins, you're getting
reaction
things,
saves, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's all straightforward stuff. No one's reinvented it. I certainly haven't. Yep. But what I want to deliver to them is that they know that the stuff they're doing is relevant.
Yeah.
Is relevant.
That's the biggest thing for a goalkeeper. Like I said earlier about the muscle memory, but if I know that I've been working towards this and there's an outcome at the end of it, which is the match,
yeah, yeah,
and it's going to help me. Every goalkeeper just wants that little bit of help anyway.
So the best feeling in the world, I remember playing and like my goalie coach, Mickey Cole, who was a physio at Charlton and had a love of goalkeeping as well, worked really close with him, this, that, and the other. And then Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank at Chelsea. Listen, he gets a sight, a goal. He doesn't have a big touch. He just goes touch, bang. And it's powerful and it's explosive. So let's work on being set in different positions. You might not be in your ideal set,
yep,
but give yourself the best chance making saves.
Yep.
And then the Saturday comes, he has a little wriggle. He gets half a sight, a goal. He goes boom, bang.
Yep.
And then you make this real smart save close to you,
yep,
but it's travelling,
yep,
and you get it, and listen, you get a round of applause, but actually the feeling in your head is, go, oh, did that Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah.
Did that Tuesday.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
High five Coley on the way, but brilliant, mate, superb. And he's like, oh, unbelievable, because I bet you wanted to be in such a position, but you didn't want to take that extra step because, yep, you know the shot's coming.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And again, it's those moments, is that football is this global thing, billions of people involved, but the best moments are when me and you
that
know something.
Interaction, yeah.
Me and you know something, and not a secret, but we've been doing it, and there's no cameras around, and,
yep,
and I'm, you know, I'm not shouting from the rooftop saying, oh, we do this, we do that, because I have no, I don't, self-praise is no,
yeah,
praise for me. I just want to crack on and do the stuff.
Yep.
So when it comes in and works, it's brilliant.
Yeah, but that's the humbleness of being the goalkeeper and knowing the situation, is that you're in it together. We have that little mentality where,
yeah,
it's like you're just helping your mate out constantly and vice versa.
Absolutely.
What about the gym work for goalkeepers? We talked off air a little
bit
about
it
and how you adapt it throughout your career and that. But as a coach now, how hands-on are you with what your goalies need?
I was probably more West Brom when I was first in the coaching. We would be the little reaction balls. We would be on that proprioception and this, that, and the other. I'd be developing games where you're slamming these balls in and you're making reactions. We've got a Swiss ball, we're playing cricket off,
yeah,
that, you throw it in, three goalies around making saves, and we're doing all sorts. Now the S&C and the way that department has grown is they do their bit. I like to have an involvement and I like to tie in, and certainly when people are coming back from injuries and this, that, and the other, I like to be taking them out in the grass, get their hands and eyes in,
yep,
without, you know, they'll be restricted. But certainly like Wayne Hennessy, for example, did a rec fem.
Yep.
And Ollie, the physio at one of them at Crystal Palace, was like, listen, we're doing all this and it's great and it looks good in the gym and this, that, and the other, but I don't want it to be to the detriment of when he comes back out. So,
yep,
we linked in well, and that had a nice feeling about it, because in the gym, that's your domain, that's where you do your thing. But I can certainly link and marry up and
yep,
put into place that sort of thing. And I enjoy it, because, again, the correlation always comes back to goalkeeping.
Yep.
When I played,
they do, oh, this test, that test, jump test, this, that, and the other, 61 or 59, this, that, and the other. I was like, listen, see, when the ball's there, I'm going to get it.
Yep.
And I was, listen, probably had a bit to say for myself. I was quite sarcastic sometimes, and I'd be like, well, hold on. Oh, you're depleted here, and you might have to do this. And I'm like, well, Saturday, I got there.
Yeah.
And I made that save, yep. And it's that new there. So, I don't know, might have come across as a bit clever at times, but there's a part for it. The science,
yep.
But it's goalkeeping.
Yeah,
it's goalkeeping.
It's got to always go back to just keeping the ball out of the net, and the best way to do that. And if it makes you more functional at doing that, that will make you better.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't, and it's taken away from that, I always find that with the sports scientists especially, there's give and take a lot, but it always does have to come back to what's the best for that individual, what's the best for me, what can't I do, what can I do, what will make me better.
Yeah.
And so that's it.
Like, visibly, could I have bigger biceps? Could I? Yeah. Did it help me be a better goalkeeper? The shape and frame is not, I've not just left it to nature.
Yeah.
This is, I've put myself in the best shape when I was a player to play an optimum level.
Yep.
It's as simple as that.
And to maintain fitness as well.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And like I say, again, I'll always come back to longevity. You've said my numbers. I've said my numbers.
Yep.
They're there because I was there. I was available most weeks throughout 24 years.
Doing things right.
Yeah.
Finally, as a coach, I want to speak to you about working with multiple goalkeepers and managing those personalities. And obviously the expectation levels when you've got two first choice goalies or three first choice goalies is we know that only one of them can play. How actually behind the scenes do you manage that? Because there grows massive frustration, don't there, within the camp, but you are so supportive of each other. It's a weird
situation. Yeah, I think it is. What I've tried to do over the years, certainly West Brom was a big learning thing for me in terms of the goalies in. So obviously, you know, Ben Foster really well. Yeah. And obviously I coached him for a long time, really enjoyed it. Boaz Myhill was his backup, solid, real solid guy, this, that and the other, working away. What I try not to do is just be focused and honed in on the one.
Yep.
Because sometimes, and I've been in both situations.
Yep.
Where then the two, three, or the young kid or this centre is going like, can't get on this geezer. Like, he's all over him. Yeah. So that broad, you know, yeah, we're focusing on, but we're giving everyone. Because, you know, you're an injury and a red card away from, now it's you.
Yep.
And the best feeling in the world for me sometimes is, you know, managers or coaches or people in and around clubs are going, oh my God, the goalie's got injured and what are we going to do? I tell you what we're going to do. That one's going to get some treatment.
Yep.
And see that one who's been working his absolute socks off for months and months and months and not had a sniff.
Yep.
He's ready to go.
Yep.
You haven't seen him.
Yeah, yeah.
In a game.
Because you're not
looking. Because he hasn't played and you don't need to look. But he's all right. He'll be okay.
Yep.
So young Joe Whitworth playing in the Premier League last year, everyone goes, oh my God, what are we going to do? I go, hold on a minute. See, all these goalies I've got, he's injured, that one's injured. So now we're picking that one.
Yeah.
And everyone's got, no. He's been doing the same work, same content, this, that and the other, delivering. You just haven't seen him because he hasn't had the shirt on in the team on a Saturday.
Yeah.
But now he has.
Yeah.
And that calmness is knowing that they're all right.
Yeah. But that you've got your department into a great position that you're ready for all those scenarios. And to get Joe in the team was incredible. And at the time, was eye-raising.
Yeah, Joe Whitworth and Owen Goodman played Brighton, were the two goalies. They're 18, 19-year-olds. You know, respectfully, no one's probably heard of them outside of people who know proper goalkeeping.
Yeah, yeah.
And they go, wow, what's going on? But it's a nice feeling. And they go, hold on, relax, everyone.
Yep.
This is their job. This is what they train to do all the time. The fact that you don't see them
doesn't
mean they're not doing it.
No, of course, yeah.
So they're ready. So I'm not sat there with my heart and my mouth going, oh, I hope they do okay. Right, relax.
Yeah.
It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know, and it normally transpires that way because they're doing their thing, isn't they?
Yeah.
And then no one's watching.
And then after, see, like, those sort of occasions, see, like, Joe got in the team and that. It's then about trying to remanage him and the realistic expectation of when's your next game because it's not always going to be, like, plain sailing. You get on that ship and you're off, like.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you know, Joe fits in really well. I was at Colchester last night watching Owen Goodman play League Two, getting some games. And so they're all on this journey and they're all, like you said, that's how you pitch your question.
They're all at different levels, yep, different positions, but they're all trying to keep going and keep progressing and going up. And I've got to be there to help them on their way. It's weird is that at West Brom, throughout, you know, look, you know, Jack Rose, Alex Palmer, Luke Daniels, Ryan Allsop, probably at times when they've, you know, certainly, let's say Ryan Allsop, you know, leaving West Brom, a local lad, this, that, and the other, I'm sure him and his family were like, God, you know, bad to see, oh, he don't know what he's doing, Dean Kiley, or the manager, or the club, yeah, or this, that, and the other. But actually, in a quiet moment, what the academy, and then what being involved in the first team, being around, but are you going to get in ahead of Ben Foster at the time? No, but do you know what? I think you make a career.
Yep.
Crack on, next part of your journey, wherever it takes you.
Yep.
Now, at that time, it's raw, it's painful, it's like, oh, Dean Kiley's this, or West Brom's this, or blah, blah, blah. Get it? But actually now, decade away, good solid career, good lad,
yep,
good goalkeeper, earned a career, earned a living. Well done.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
So way down along the line, on reflection, yep, quietly, yep, I don't want anyone to ever do it outwardly, but hopefully they go, you know what?
Fundamentals were there.
Had a good run at West Brom, really set me up well. Or, yep, you know, Mark Naylor, the academy coach at West Brom at the time, who's now at Villa, he's had some good goalies through.
Yeah.
You know, and has everyone gone and played in the first team at West Brom? No. Have they gone on and been solid professional footballers and very good lads and very good players? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
Right, my final one for you, Dino, and it's been an absolute pleasure having you on, but I always like to finish on this one, is what does the Goalkeepers Union mean to you? Nice deep one to finish on.
Yeah, yeah. I think the Goalkeeper Union is, the best thing is that when you play in a game, win, lose or draw, is that sometimes with the opposite one, they know what you've been through and they know the feeling, whether it's elation or, you know, you sort of the disappointment, is that they know, and yep, without going, they don't go right over the top, but it's just a knowing glance or a whatever. It's like, we're all in it. You've said it a few times, yep, today. We're all in this together. We know what it feels like. Yep. We know the hard work. We know everything you've got to put into it. So when it's good that other goalkeepers know the feeling you're going through. It's like, good. And when it's bad, they're like, hey, little pat on the back. Crack on, you know what I mean? Because it turns around and it's going to be good.
Yep.
And it normally is. Mm. Normally is.
Yeah. Dino, it's been an absolute pleasure and an honour to have you on, mate. Honestly, you've played a big part in my career as well, without knowing it.
Oh, listen, it's been a pleasure. I'd have just been on my BMX kicking balls around by the garages if I weren't in here today.
So yeah, nice. Thank you very much for coming on, Dean Kiley. Thank you very much.
Nice one. Cheers.
Can I say a massive thank you to our sponsors, Mito Red Light Therapy and Forged Irish Stout. They definitely help the pod grow. Make sure you go like and subscribe. It's really important. A lot of you aren't following, so make sure you do follow along, please, guys. This has been the Yours, Mine, Away podcast with me, Mark Howard.
What a save from Mark Howard.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.